It's funny because how the instant change in the weather can just kind of give you a little jolt, you know, because it's all about where you're coming from. And so a lot of times the things that we notice with the weather or the way our bodies feel have everything to do with the place we were just at. And so whatever the current temperature is often driven by our emotions. It's by a perspective of whatever we were used to. I took a trip to Colorado for work. It was in the thick of summer, one of those 100-degree days where, you know, we breaking records and you can put the weather on repeat because whatever it was yesterday, it is today, hot. And I go to Colorado, I remember, in the northern part of the state, and it was probably about 76 degrees or so. It was nice and breezy, you know. And I literally was like, I need a sweater. It is chilly. I mean, and 76 degrees to me is like an ideal temperature. That's like outside, you know, you don't need a coat, maybe a sleeve in the evening, but it's beautiful weather. But it felt cold to me because it was about 30 degrees cooler than what I had just come from. And so it's the same thing we're dealing with now. When I think about the weather, I think about how temperamental we are and how the weather has everything to do with whatever we just got through experiencing, right? And I think one of the things that we get in trouble with sometimes is letting our faith and our relationship with the Lord be just as temperamental. And we start to assess where he has us and what we're feeling based on the last thing we felt, as opposed to figuring out what is the absolute standard of God's truth. What is the absolute standard of faith and the life he's called me to? And so tonight, I want to talk to you for just a little bit about a woman that most of you, if not all of you, already know. And see what we can pull from her life. I'm kind of going back to my women of the Bible. We took a little break last time with the 23rd Psalm. But we are going to go back to that tonight. And I just want to share with you a few observations from the life of Rahab. So I want to share with you a little bit about the life of Rahab. And what I want to focus on is really what I would like to call the fruit of faith. The fruit of faith. Most of us are familiar with her story, that she was a woman who was called a prostitute in the scriptures, but had a really unique opportunity to become a part of God's greater plan. And we know her story and what it means to be redeemed and who God can use in any kind of way and all that good stuff. But Rahab actually really goes much deeper than just changing her identification. She actually teaches us quite a bit in Joshua chapter 2. So let's go to Joshua chapter 2. We're going to talk about the fruit of faith. And it's basically the evidence of a heart that is rooted and anchored in God. It's the evidence of a heart that's rooted and anchored in God. What does it look like? How can I look at my life? How can I check in with God? How can I self-assess and determine whether or not I really am living and walking in faith? It's not just how I feel, because as we just learned, I could feel like I'm doing really well, and it's only because I just came out of doing really bad. The same reason why today feels cold. And I could feel like I'm at the bottom and I'm horrible and I'm a wretch undone. And it could just be because the Lord's taken me out of maybe a high place where I was walking very closely with him. And so I don't want to just go by how I feel, because then it becomes relative to whatever my last experience was. I want to say, what are biblical evidences that say I am walking in faith? If a woman comes to me or God gives me opportunity to speak into someone's life, before I quickly say you need to have more faith, I want to be able to think through, wait a minute, is this really an issue of faith? Is this person really demonstrating the fruit of faith? What might really be the issue? And so Joshua chapter 2 is where we're going to be today. I'm probably going to end up doing this in two parts, just because Rahab has a lot to say. And so do the scriptures on this particular topic. And so I will start actually with verse 1. And just read a few verses in her story so you get the gist of what's going on for those of you that this story may be new to. So Joshua chapter 2 says this, and this is the English Standard Version, so you may have the NASB which is normally what I use, but tonight is the English Standard Version, maybe a little different. Joshua chapter 2, verse 1 says this, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, 'Go view the land, especially Jericho.' And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. It was then told to the king of Jericho, 'Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land.' Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab a word saying, 'Bring out the men who've come to you and entered your house, for they've come to search out the land.' But as you skip down through the next few verses, Rahab had hidden the men, and she told the messenger of the king, 'True, the men came to me, but I didn't know where they came from.' And verse 5 says, 'And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. And she told them, 'I don't know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them.' And then verse 6 says, 'But she had brought them up.' In reality, what's happening, she told the king's messenger to pursue the men. They left the city. But what happened in reality, in verse 6 says, she brought them up to the roof, hid them with stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men, the king's men, pursued them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out." It goes on in the next few verses to detail out a conversation that Rahab had with these men. And she told them before they laid down, verse 8 says, it was kind of like, don't go to sleep yet. I have some things I need to talk with you about. And she comes in verse 9 and she starts to tell them all the things that she's heard about the Lord. Goes on to basically negotiate a deal to say, "Look, now I've hid you and I need you to protect my family because I know what the Lord is about to do." And ultimately, as you read through Joshua 2 and Joshua 7, you see that Rahab was spared because of her faith. But Rahab, if you look in verse 10 of chapter 2, she says, "For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the king of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sion and Og, whom you devoted to destruction, et cetera, et cetera." And verse 11 says, "And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath." She was telling the men, "We had heard about these stories of what your God had done." And she says, "And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted." As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted. And she declared then, and I don't know if she's still speaking on behalf of the people, because she says, "When we heard it, our hearts melted." But then she goes on to say, "For the Lord your God, he is God." The Lord your God, he is God. Now, I don't know if she's speaking on behalf of everyone else, but she is certainly saying for herself, "Not only did my heart melt when I heard about the things that God has done, I came to a realization that the Lord your God, he is God." And if you look at the timeline of this story, that her heart melted and she came to this realization as she began to hear of the things that the Lord has done. Well, that's in the past. So we know that the time the men, the spies, came to her house, this was a woman who already had a melted heart and had already declared God to be the one true God. So the fruit of her faith is what we want to look at. These things did not happen in Rahab's life in order that she might believe. These happened because she had already believed. Now, the word doesn't tell me she had stopped being a prostitute or she had changed her line of business. So I don't know what was going on with her behavior, but I'm very clear of where her heart was, even before these men came to her door. So I can look at the following events and know that this was a woman who already had a ready and primed heart for what the Lord might do. She had already seen and heard the power and the wonder and the works of God and chosen to believe that the Lord, their God, was God. And so when I look at this first situation in verse 1, the very first verse of chapter 2, this woman Rahab, who has already admitted to these men that her heart has already been melted for the Lord, a woman who had already chosen to believe even what she had not seen, because she had only heard about the Lord. But she had faith, which is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. So even things she had not seen, she clearly believed that God was who he said he was. And so in verse 1 of chapter 2, the first thing that jumps out, it says, Joshua sent these two spies saying, go to view the land, especially Jericho. And the second sentence of verse 1 says, and they went and came into the house of a prostitute. Now, the Bible doesn't give a whole lot of connection there. But before we get to Rahab, can we just try to ponder that the fact that the men of God just rolled up at a prostitute's house? I don't know if that was like deep cover, what they were trying to do. They were spying, I guess trying to be covert. I'm like, how you just happen up on the prostitute's house? Really? That's all right, though. The men of God, and quite honestly, they weren't trained spies. They were just regular people that trying to be obedient to what God was doing, what God had promised. So they just happened upon this place that was the house of a prostitute, and they lodged there. So they didn't say, oh, that's a prostitute. We got to, let's find somewhere else. They were like, oh, it's just one night. We can lodge there. She all right. She won't be intimidated. She won't be bothered. It's already a little strange that the men of God coming to spy out the land were in the house of a prostitute. But again, we'll say that was a little undercover work, because they really weren't very good spies, because we see right away word got to the king that they were there. So they weren't that discreet. I don't know what the time distance is between verse 1 and verse 2, but as soon as they lodged there, then it was told to the king that the men were there. So I'm like, they clearly were not very discreet. So, and it probably was pretty easy to figure out what was going on at Rahab's house. And the king probably knew if his men in town, they probably were Rahab. Because Rahab had a reputation. Not just a reputation, a business. And quite a profitable one, because she had a house. And if you read through chapter 2, her whole family stayed with her. And she had a scarlet cord, and she had stalks of flax, things that were not inexpensive to buy. So this was a businesswoman. Businesswoman, don't hate on Rahab. Don't hate. We talking about fruits of faith. And I'm saying this because I think it's interesting that the Bible does not try to pretty her up and clean her up before it tells us these acts of faith that she did. See, God's goal here is not to make us feel okay about the fact that she was a prostitute and even lied in the midst of this whole situation. God's goal is to say, I want you to see the fruit of a heart that's melted toward me. Even if the behavior hasn't gotten fixed like you think it should, and maybe she wasn't dressing quite covered up just yet, and maybe she hadn't set some good, healthy boundaries with men, and maybe she was a little too lax and letting two strange men come up in her house late at night. It may have been a lot of things that Rahab needed to work on as far as her behavior, but the issue was her heart was melted toward the Lord. And she said, I have decided that the Lord your God, he is God. And God doesn't use any of who she is to disqualify her. But what you see in the very first verse, I call the first fruit of faith, is this. It is eyes to see God's providence. Eyes to see God's providence is the first fruit of faith that I want to talk about. So I'm not talking about God's providence is the fruit. I'm saying having the eyes to recognize it is the fruit of faith. Because only when we have a heart that's been melted by God, basically that word means to be dissolved, to be made nothing, because it is so enthralled with who God is, to be so open, so teachable, so looking for God in all of these moments, that she was able to see God's providence. And I don't even know if she intentionally saw it. But I do know this, that instead of saying, who are you and why are you at my house, something made her say, come in. And while you're here, can we talk for a minute? In a moment. So she not only saw God's providence, she was able to respond to it. And I just wonder how many of us are living lives so defined by faith that our hearts are set toward the Lord and not toward our own agenda, that if he were to bring something providential in our lives, we would recognize it, that we would be able to respond, that we would be able to distinguish God's providence versus something that might just look like our past cropping back up. It could have just looked to Rahab like some more men were coming for some more business. But something was different about these two. She didn't proposition them and offer them business. She gave them a place to stay on the roof, and she hid them, and she immediately came to their defense when the king questioned their whereabouts. What was it about these men that made her want to align herself with them? What was it about these men that made her want to risk her life when the king came inquiring about them? I don't know what it was, but I believe that a heart melted toward the Lord has the eyes to see providence. Something just says, this is not what you think it is. Go forward in faith. Just trust me. Now, there's a difference between providence and provision. There's a difference between providence and provision. Let me say this. So provision is the meeting of a need, right? It's the supplying or the meeting of a need. But providence is basically God's supernatural orchestration that leads to his provision if we see the providence. See, providence is when God is saying, I am positioning things in people, and it could lead to provision. But it takes faith to see providence. So I want y'all to stay with me here. It doesn't take faith to capitalize on provision. Provision says, there's a need. Let me give that to you. It's met. You don't have to believe it. You see it. You're touching it. You're holding it. Providence says, there is potential provision in the way God has orchestrated things. Will you see it? See, provision is Jesus multiplying loaves and fish to feed thousands. Providence is that there was a boy there that had the fish and five loaves. The boy could have been there. God providence. He provided the opportunity. But the faith that even Jesus Christ demonstrated was the act of taking that, blessing that, and trusting that the Lord would make it meet the need. And there's a difference. It didn't take faith to eat the bread and the fish when it was getting passed out. It took faith to pray over the two fish and the five loaves and say, there is potential provision in here. See, the fruit of faith is the eyes to see providence, the eyes to see God's providence. So if you think back to the Old Testament, in further back in Exodus and Deuteronomy, when the Lord was leading the children of Israel through the wilderness, and he was providing them daily manna, remember? He was giving them daily bread. Well, that was provision. They saw that coming. They were able to touch that, taste that. It met a need. But providence was the cloud. Providence was, if you just keep your eyes on this, I've positioned something around you that could lead to potential provision. Now, it takes faith to follow the cloud. It don't take faith to eat the manna. And so I'm saying the fruit of our faith comes in the ability to recognize God's providence. And how many situations where there is potential provision, where God is saying, I need you to look beyond the physical. I need you to look into the spiritual and see the potential provision in this. Because your milk faith, your baby faith, anybody can eat the food once I've provided it. But do you see the providence in just the places that I've set you, in the people that I've put you around, in the situations that I've caused to happen? Are you looking for me in my providence? See, provision is the ram in the bush. It's realizing that God has made another way. He's met a need. But providence is that he led you to that altar. providence says, why is it this place at this time? Could there be something that God wants to give me? And so Rahab had faith to see God's providence. Whether she thought through all the things that could come out of this interaction, something made her deal with these men differently. So much so that instantly, before she even let them go to sleep, she said, we need to talk. I need to make an agreement, because I see an opportunity for me to align with this God that I've just committed myself to. I see an opportunity. There's no one in this land that serves the God that you serve. And then here you come, and I've been hearing about this God, and my heart has been ready, and now you're here. Someone's here that can connect me to that God. There's potential provision in this. There's something that God may have for me. So how do I make the most of it? But let me tell you, ladies, only a heart that is melted toward the Lord can even begin to see God's providence, can even begin to see it. Because we get stuck on provision and we're like, God, I need a job. I need to pay these bills. And God is saying, maybe my providence has put you in a community of believers that's going to provide more than what a job would right now. And you're saying, God, I need this healing. I need my body to be made whole. I need provision. And God is saying, well, maybe my providence has put you in a situation where you're starting to realize the nourishment of my word over the fixing of your body. Maybe I've set you in a situation to help you rethink whatever you thought you needed as provision, and I've shown you other opportunities how I can provide for you beyond just the felt need, beyond just the end result. And I love the fact that Rahab saw the bigger picture. She knew these men were the men who represented the God who dried up the Red Sea, led the people out of Israel, conquered all these kings. And she did not say, can you please fix my life? I need to get out of prostitution. That was not the first thing on her mind. It was not, how can I reorchestrate what's going on with me so I can be in a better situation or a better position? The first thing she said was, you need to swear to me that when you destroy this land, you will protect me and save my family. I want to be aligned with the God that is the real God. That's my main concern. And I want that for my whole household. So the first fruit of faith is the eyes to see God's providence. So I want you to think about something. Take a few moments, and I'm going to do this after each point tonight, because I want us to really think about this. I want you to think about something either going on in your life right now, or something that maybe has happened recently that might be God's providence. And maybe we just took it too lightly, or we thought it was a coincidence, or maybe we haven't even put two and two together. It's just a potential provision sitting out there somewhere in our lives that we are looking past, because we're looking for the physical. We're looking for the stuff that can make us feel better and fix whatever tangible thing is going on in our lives. And there is providence waiting at the door for us to take advantage of. So I want you to take just 10 seconds and say, Lord, is there something going on with me that maybe I'm not paying attention to? So just take 10 seconds. I'm going to give you 10 to 15 seconds. And write it down. So when you think about providence, I want you to think about two things. I want you to look at where you are today. And we kind of talked about this when we went through Purpose, the Purpose series we did. I want you to look at where you are today and the things that are happening to you on a regular basis. I don't know if you all have ever done this, but sometimes I get on a plane to travel, and I'm always saying, okay, Lord, if the person you're going to sit me next to needs to hear the gospel, needs some encouragement, just let me know before I go to sleep. Because I'm tired, I'm trying to go to sleep. And there have been, I can't tell you how many times, there has been someone who sat down next to me, and, you know, I may kind of just push the conversation a little bit just to see where they are spiritually, and it turns into something that was just a divine moment. Or a new coworker starts at your job, and you're like, okay, why was it that person? Why are they sitting by me? What's going on? Am I always looking for God to be doing something Do I believe that everything in my life, God is positioning for me to do something for his glory, for me to do something for his name's sake? And that's just looking for providence. It's like if you ever read the story of Esther. So it wasn't so much the provision of God setting the people free, because her uncle told her, if it's not you, it's going to be somebody. God can provide. But the providence is, could it just be that for such a time as this, this is why God made you an orphan, put you in that city, made you beautiful, made you desirable to that king, made you the most desired wife, made you the one he could find favor with, made you the one that didn't have to follow all the rules when you came before him? Could it just be that all those things are providential and God is setting us up for a great provision? Could it be? And I just think that sometimes we look at our lives so tangibly, like what we can see and touch, because our needs are pressing in on us all the time. You know, that reality is right there. Chaos at home and bills and tithing, like everyone said, everything that's going on is right there and it's felt. And it's very hard sometimes to elevate our thinking and say, wait a minute, where is God's hand in this? What is the providence? Providence is a young man that I heard about a couple of weeks ago, actually. Beta told me about him. And I asked her one day, because she's kind of one of our spiritual daughters, so, you know, I always have eyes on her. And I was actually up here singing one Sunday, but I saw her sitting next to a boy. And I was like, I'm singing. I was like, we were, who's that? Hallelujah. Who is that man? And so I was like, oh, I'm going to text her. I don't know him, haven't seen him. Why are y'all up in church together? And I text her, and I said, who's that boy you sitting next to in church? And you know what she said to me? She said he was circling around the area trying to find another church, and he ended up at one. And so I just brought him in, said, this, you can come to our church. And there he was on Sunday morning. That's providence. That's providence. And so when God allows things to happen in our lives, you have to be asking the question, what is it that could be behind this door if my faith just allows me to walk through it? And I'm not talking about consequences and circumstances and, you know, your old boyfriend shows up at your front door and you're like, that is the Lord's providence. That is not what I'm saying. Don't put that on me. Don't leave and be like, Jada said. No. I'm talking about things that are for his glory, things that you know are uniquely not necessarily a direct benefit to your felt need, but something bigger could be going on. Something bigger could be going on. If you've ever been compelled to have a very difficult conversation with someone that you didn't want to have it with, maybe you needed to apologize for something. Maybe you needed to work through a tough issue. And sure enough, that conversation will turn into way more interaction than you really wanted, because you were like, Lord, I was just trying to be obedient. And now she wants to be best friends. Really? I'm going to talk to her all the time? And the Lord's like, yep, let it go. Providence. Providence is not a coincidence. I'm stretching you, and I knew this was going to happen. So anyway, I want us to be looking for God's providence. I just think what Rahab did in being able to capitalize on these men showing up at her door and knowing already what she wanted from the Lord was her ability and her faith to act on God's providence. So the first thing I said is your providence, you want to look for it in the situations that are around you. I'm always kind of thinking about that, whether it's the grocery store I walk into or a person that joins our ministry. Even sometimes when people, I have met women who have moved to Dallas for a man and get here, and guess what happened? Relationship gone. He engaged, y'all broke up, he not thinking about you, y'all had a long distance relationship for 4 years, y'all planned this move, and you here, and now he's nowhere to be found. But was that really the provision? Or was that the providence? God was like, look, I knew you were listening to him more than you were listening to me, and I needed you to be in this place. Let that man go. He wasn't a provision. The providence was God getting you here, wherever here is for you. And he will use whatever he has to do to get you there. God will speak through the things that you listen to the most. And a lot of times it's not him. So don't be surprised when God uses the foolish things of this world to send you down a path of wisdom. Just follow and obey. He does it all the time. All the time. So one of the first fruit of our faith is being able to see God's providence. Okay, that's the supernatural positioning that he does before there's provision. So we want to be beyond just asking God for what we need, what we feel, what we want. We want to be looking for God's providence because so much more can come out of that. And that leads us on to our second fruit of faith that we're going to talk about tonight. So first, it was eyes to see God's providence. And second, it's boldness to seek God's promises. Boldness to seek God's promises. So only a heart of faith has the boldness that God needs from us to believe him at his word. Because when our heart is more turned on our past or our issues or the things that we're not healed from or the voices in our head saying that it's not going to work out or the things and the people in our lives that are like faith killers, you know, the things and the people in your life that are faith killers, they're going to always say it's not going to work or the flesh will always find itself in a situation that you thought you were done dealing with. That kind of stuff, things that seem like they're faith killers. Every time you get excited about the Lord and invigorated about what he's about to do next, it seems like a valley is the next step. And you find yourself laying face down in the mud, like, how did I get here? I thought I was done with this. But the heart of faith says, even this valley, even this mess that I find myself in, should not diminish my boldness in seeking God and the truth that he's promised me. It should not diminish my ability to go boldly before the throne of God and say, according to your word, this is what you said was mine. And so what Rahab does is she comes to these men and she's not intimidated. She might not even know enough protocol and tradition to even be intimidated by these men of God. And she comes to them and she starts talking to them and telling them the wonderful things that their God had done. She started talking about the power of this Lord she had seen. He dried up the water of the Red Sea, defeated the king of the Amorites. And then she goes on to say in verse 12, now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you will also deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them and deliver our lives from death. Now, this was a pretty bold woman to go up to these men and say, how you doing? I know who your God is. I need you to promise not to kill me if I let you come in here. I need to make a deal with you. That's a pretty bold woman. And maybe it was the providence of the fact that she really had a comfort level with men that a lot of women in that day might not have had. So you just never know how God may use our past to set us up for certain situations. But she certainly had no problem going to them. And I believe that another fruit of Rahab's faith was the boldness to seek God's promise. She was not intimidated by who she was or who these men were or what the situation was. If a man or two men or a team or whatever came to me and said, we are about to blow up Dallas, can we stay with you? I'll be like, Lord, is that you, Lord? And I don't know what might be going on, but if my heart had told me it was the Lord, I would have to be pretty bold to say, you know what? I don't know y'all, and I don't really know your people. I don't know where you live and where you're going back to, but I know your God. Can I go with you? Will you spare me? Will you spare my family? The boldness that she had to have to even propose that question, to ask that, to get them to swear to her that they would save her. She didn't know what she was going to be going to, but she knew it would be life and not death. And she knew she believed in the God that they served. And so her faith really gave her the boldness to seek God's promise. This was a woman whose heart was melted toward the Lord. She already knew God was who he said he was. And so she said, I might as well take advantage of every opportunity to be saved by the God I know is going to destroy the place I'm in. Now, the boldness to seek God's promises, ladies, sometimes means that you've got to realize God is going to destroy the place that you are. And are you bold enough to take hold of the lifeline that he may have dropped your way? But sometimes we hold on to the sinking ship. Hold on, trying to fix it and make it better and plug the holes. And God has said, I am clear. I'm going to destroy this thing that you're a part of. This relationship, this situation, this mess, it's going down. Do you want to go down with it? Or you want to hold on to this lifeline that I've sent you? But if I don't have the boldness to see God's promises for me, if I don't have the faith that allows me to recognize his providence, I'll be like everybody else in Jericho, where they are today, dead and deceased, because I didn't take advantage of an opportunity that was presented to me. So Rahab had the boldness to seek God's promises. She marveled at what he had done. She recounted his power. One of the things I think that helps us to seek God's promises is remembering his power that he's demonstrated. Now, if you've ever found yourself talking to a person who might be a new believer, maybe young in the faith, maybe not even be a believer yet, and they can start telling you things that they know about God, stuff that you kind of forgot about. If God has ever used someone that you may have thought was less mature or young in their faith to encourage you in the Lord, it's because sometimes we just forget the simplicity of his power. And it took Rahab saying, wait a minute, your God is the God that parted the Red Sea. Your God is the God that defeated these kings and conquered these cities. Your God is the God that's going to take over the land I'm living in now. I know it belongs to your people. So this was a woman who was so in tune and so overwhelmed by God's power that she had no qualms about asking these men to spare her life, to even swear by the God that they had all agreed was the one true God. So have we ignored obvious signs of God's power? Could there be places where God has promises for us that we are not strong enough in our faith to seek out? It goes again to this idea of provision versus providence. The tangible and touchable, the things that we can feel versus the things that we know are the intrinsic promises that God gives us as believers. So as we grow in faith, here's one of the things I want you to think about. Our promises, the promises that we seek from God evolve as we grow in our faith. They evolve. And so it goes from, Lord, I need a job, or I need, you know, a paycheck, or this job, this opportunity, to, Lord, I really just need your joy. I really just need to stay in a state of joy, because the job might pay this bill this month, but my heart could wind up back in this same sad place as soon as that paycheck is gone, or as soon as that job situation changes. Yet the things, the promises that you seek from God tend to evolve. And so it goes from just needing healing and, God, I just want to be well, to saying, you know what, it's well with my soul. Lord, I want to be able to say, God, it is well with my soul. And I'd love for you to heal me, and I'd love for you to fix these and find these answers and fix this situation in my life. But really, above all of that, I want to genuinely be able to say, it is well with my soul. That there is a peace that resounds in me that a situation can't change. That's what I want from the Lord. And so as we grow in our faith, the boldness to seek God's promises continues to evolve. Rahab, a woman who probably was young in her faith, had an immediate need. She did not want to die. And that's okay. Sometimes we have an immediate need. And we got this right here is where I need you. I need you to come to the rescue. But then as we evolve in our faith, as we grow, those felt needs very often tend to evolve into just those faith promises. God, I need you to restore to me the joy that you said was mine, to bring up the peace that you said I should have, to take away the anxiety and the fear that you said was not of you. So there are always going to be earthly situations going on, but the promises that I really need to believe God for are the things that nothing on earth can fix. They're the things that no situation can change. Those are the things that I want to boldly go before his throne and declare to be mine, because he said, if I follow him, they're mine. But only a heart of faith is able to seek God's promises. So lastly, for tonight, our third fruit of faith, evidence that we are walking in faith, evidence that our hearts are fully for the Lord, is that we have the wisdom to use our position for God's glory. The wisdom to use our position for God's glory. I want you to look at verse 15 in chapter 2. It says, then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. I had the privilege several years ago of going to Israel, and I think I've told y'all that before. And it was fascinating to go to the ruins of Jericho and see the way these city walls were built. And the walls were actually the width of a room. So when it says she lived on the wall, it really meant that the outside wall of her home was the exterior wall of the city. And so people who could afford it could live. Rahab had a little money. So people who could afford it lived along the city wall. And a lot of times it would be guards and soldiers and military. But there will also be some civilians, just regular families, living on the city wall. And so literally as you entered the gate, the distance between the gate and you actually being in the city was the width of these houses that were actually built into the wall all the way around the city. So Rahab has one of these prime spots. She's got this house that's in the wall. And this is the reason why she's able to have this rope that lets them down out of a window, because the window of her outside wall puts them outside the city. So that's not coincidence. So a heart of faith says, wait a minute, God has given me a unique position. What am I doing with that? It's not an accident that I'm on the wall. It's not an accident that I can let people out of my home without having to go back through the main gate. And I'm craving promotion. Maybe there's some area in my life and I want God to give me more. But he's saying, but what are you doing with the position I've already given you? And will my glory increase with your promotion or just your glory? Because the heart of faith, the fruit of our faith, is that we have the wisdom to use our position for God's glory. We are able to recognize that wherever he's placed us, wherever he has placed us in life, whether you think it's too high, too low, too whatever, it's where he has you. And what am I doing with that influence? How am I using that for God's glory? And so when we want to be trusted with more or given more, and we want a certain status, or we're asking God to take us to a new level, and he's saying, tell me how I benefit from this position that I might give you. How does it make my kingdom come and my will be done? Because the fruit of faith says it's not just about me. I need to understand, again, providence. Why does God have me in this place right now? Sometimes the position is a lowly position, and it's one of humility, but it's still a place where God may be having you to minister in a way that you weren't able to before. Why are you there in that point, in that place? I remember when I was laid off from my first job out of college. It was a little traumatic, but I was laid off, and I needed to be. The Lord was just dealing with me. So I was laid off, and I remember looking for temporary jobs. And, you know, temp jobs, they drain you. Temp jobs drain you. I think so. That's my personal philosophy. So I ended up working in a call center, and I learned that that is not my gifting, because I'm just not the person to deal with complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint in a real pleasant way. And it's what was required of me, pleasant. I could be efficient, but I don't know that they would have said, she was so pleasant. And there were some times where I had to say, I need to pass you on. And by the way, when they pass you on to a supervisor, it's the person sitting next to them. Because our supervisor was like, look, I'm busy. When somebody asks for a supervisor, just transfer. I'm not going to even tell y'all where I worked, because y'all will be like, I'm never calling there again. So, yes, supervisor, loose quotes. So I was always passing people off. And at the end of our week, we would have our stats about how many successful calls we completed. And they would rank us. And how long our conversations were. And so you got rewarded for the shorter conversation. You know, if you were able to say, hello, thank you for calling so-and-so, how can I help you? And they ask for a question, da-da-da-da, you fix it, 1, 2, 3, closed out, done, next call. So you're making money for the company if you can turn those calls around. So I was always at the bottom of that list because when people call, I was like, now what? Now, wait a minute, how did you first get into this situation? And my supervisor was like, you don't need all that background. Just figure out what they need. Look at those menu options, do it, and hang up. And, you know, I would be on the phone talking to folks and people having a hard day, and they're like, well, this is my daughter's first day of daycare. And I'm like, girl, let me pray with you. You going through right now, but that's okay, because right now you just need some encouragement. And my supervisor was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I am encouraging somebody. And we're trying to keep customers. He's like, no, we're trying to turn calls over. So I was always the worst. I had the longest conversations, the least completed calls, because I would encourage everybody to go to a supervisor. I'm like, you need to talk to somebody about that's just not right, you know. And so eventually I got moved out of that job. But I will say this, that even while I was there and the experience itself wasn't one I would define as enjoyable, I wouldn't define it as lucrative working in a call center. I certainly wouldn't define it as one of my personal aspirations. It just didn't fit me. But I have no doubt why the Lord gave me that position. I have no doubt. There are three women that I worked with in that call center that to this day I'm in touch with and spiritually encourage when they need. And one of them, after about 5 years, ended up coming to our singles ministry that we started at our former church and got saved and is now plugged into that church. It was 5 years after I left because we stayed in touch. And so when I talk about a heart of faith finds wisdom in using your position for God's glory, it's never a coincidence that your house is on the wall. It never is. Even if it's not the place you want to be, you have to be asking the question, why am I here? What does God want out of this? Sometimes what he wants out of it is to first sharpen you. Sometimes he wants to teach you like he needed to teach me. And one of many, many ongoing lessons about humility and what it meant to just be used and to be available. So what does he have for me to learn? And then how can I use this for his glory? So would I say that 7 or 8 months in a situation that I really didn't enjoy, if it brought one person to the Lord, would I say that that was worth it? Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't feel like it was worth it then. But as I look back, I can say, you know what, God, that was a position that you clearly put me in. And so I think if we're going to have lives that are defined and characterized by faith, you have to be looking for God's providence. Don't just get stuck on his provision. It don't take faith to capitalize on God's provision. It takes faith to look for the providence, which is the potential provision. And sometimes it's so much bigger than what you were asking for. You're asking for a patch to a problem, and God is saying, I got something bigger, but I need you to have the faith to walk through that door and see what all it's capable of doing. So the fruit of faith is seeking God's providence, being able to see God's providence, and number two, being able to boldly seek God for his promises, and number three, the wisdom to use your position for God's glory. And we have three more points out of Rahab that are going to be quite challenging for us as well next Wednesday. And so I hope that's something you can just take home and think about and turn those three points into some questions. God, is there providence that you are setting things up and positioning things and people and situations in my life that I'm just looking past because I'm focused on what I want? I'm focused on provision. Is there some providential things that I need to stop and just contemplate for a minute and see if you're in it? Number two, are there some promises that I'm denying myself? Things that you said were mine, your joy, your peace, direction, purpose, wisdom, stability, lack of fear, those kind of things, because I got issues with my past or I'm not comfortable in who you've made me to be or things I need to deal with. My faith is weak and it's keeping me from trusting you for your promises. Or number three, how am I using my position? Am I more focused on my new position than what I'm doing with where you have me right now. Even if it doesn't seem like an obvious place of influence, or maybe it's not at the mountaintop, maybe it's not at the top of the heap, but you have me here for a reason for this season. How are you getting glory out of it? If you take me tomorrow, will I be able to stand before you and say, I gave you glory in the last place you had me? And so that's what I want to challenge you with tonight. And I will pray. Let's pray. Lord, thank you again for a fabulous, just a fabulous lesson and truth that comes out of your word. Lord, we thank you for just challenging us to see beyond what is in the physical, see beyond the things that we may think we need, and see how you orchestrate unique situations in our lives every single day, God. The people that cross our paths and that we find ourselves sitting next to, or the people that come into our lives through our church and our work and our family and our friends. Just so many opportunities, God, for your name to be glorified. And just help us to have spiritual eyes and spiritual ears that are discerning and seeking your hand in these providential situations, God. Give us the courage and the faith to seek you for the promises that you said were ours. Just help us to move toward healing, God. Whatever is hindering our faith for trusting you for what you already said you would do, for trusting you for the powerful God that we know you are, whatever is hindering that, God, just move us down a path of healing. And lastly, God, I just pray that wherever we may be, if we think we're at the bottom of the stack because we wish we had more, or maybe we think we're doing well and we have a good position in life, whatever it is, wherever it is, God, help us to look for opportunities to use it for your glory. We love you, Lord, and we honor you. In Jesus' name, amen.